everyone, and welcome back to UK Low Carb. And I'm really excited because I love doing these live broadcasts, and in particular this evening, because I'm really honoured to be joined by Dr. Jen Unwin. Now, before I go over to Jen, just to let you know, this is actually about a whole series we've been doing together, all about food addiction. We've focused on what is an addiction. We've looked at ways to kind of understand if you might have a food addiction itself. And then we've gone into a lot of detail around that and also how to help yourself through that addiction. And this is now the ultimate final show in that series on the podcast UK Low Carb. So without much further ado, let me welcome to the live recording here with Jen Unwin. So welcome, Dr. Jen Unwin, to this live recording on UK Low Carb.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Dan. Great to be here. I got really hypnotized by the starting video. I'm in the zone.
I thought I better keep talking just to give you a bit of a chance to snap out of it again.
Back in the room.
So I just want to say the series was really great to make with you. Thank you for doing that. And it was, you know, I do talk a lot about being on a journey, and I think that expression is sometimes overused, but in my case it really was. And I felt like I understood myself a lot better and how I work, which was quite interesting. And I don't know if anyone who's watching live, who's followed the series, also feels the same. But should we just talk through the things we discussed in that series all about food addiction?
Yeah, let's do that. And then I'm interested to hear, actually, I was going to ask you what if anything, having that information, what difference it had made to you? Because I don't know if you know, but Heidi Yaver and I, who's a nutritionist, we do run some groups, and we run weekends and things. And it's kind of the information that we go over in detail, as well as the stuff that we all know about low carb. So it's putting the two things together and then giving people the support and encouragement to sort of keep going, because that's the difficult bit, really, isn't it? It's that we all know quite a lot of this stuff. Some of this is extra information, the stuff we've been talking about over the last few weeks. But mostly we know what we should eat, really. It's not, you know, people will say, what should I eat? You know, really, don't you? You know what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat, because you know the things you can't moderate. So it's not that we're lacking in that knowledge. It's how to put that into practice in our own lives. And that's the journey, isn't it? And it's unique to all of us. Yeah. So
can I just pick on that point, though, because that's really interesting what you say there. I feel like a lot of the information about low carb and keto is about the science of metabolic health and how your hormones and how the food affects your hormones. Mm-hmm. But the psychological dimension, I think, really needs to be talked about a lot more, because just in the same way you said you know what not to eat, I feel like when it comes to low carb and keto, we know the foods that are good for us metabolically, that are good for our health. But actually, you then have to ask yourself the question, well, but why are you eating the sugar or whatever it might be that has no nutritional value to your body whatsoever, but you're still eating it and you know it's got nutritional value? If it was literally just the science of nutrition, nobody would be eating this stuff. But there's a psychological element, which I think is really interesting. And that's the human dimension around this whole topic that I think we should delve into, not just tonight, but also as a community.
And on top of that, some of us who have this problem to quite a severe degree actually struggle to moderate some of the quite nutritious and sort of nutrient dense foods like nuts and cheese, for example. I mean, dairy is a really typical one that people do talk about when they come and work with us, is that, you know, they may have actually been keto for quite a few years, but they're still struggling with the nuances of the addiction side of it, the sort of volume eating side of it, the sort of behaviors that go along with it. So it's kind of weirdly simple at one level and then incredibly complicated, really, on an individual level to sort of find what's right for yourself. And, you know, that can change over time. It's Bitten Johnson, who's our mentor, who's obviously coming over for the conference, is going to be doing, we're starting a 4-day intensive with Bitten on Sunday, which is very exciting down in Bristol. And she says it's the most difficult. It's the first addiction that we get, because it's the only really sort of psychoactive substance that we give kids. You know, we don't give them nicotine and caffeine and alcohol on the whole. But, you know, we love to see them eat sugar. So it's the first substance we get. So our brains are very kind of wired from a young age. Societally, it's kind of encouraged, you know, all the celebrations that we have around food. We're kind of seen as a bit weird, you know, if we're low carb or, you know, completely sugar free. It's everywhere. We have to eat, you know, it is a difficult habit to kick, really. And particularly in the society that we live in. Anyway, I was supposed to be recapping for the audience, wasn't I? And we've, of course, because we're not chatting about this.
Before you do, just to say to everyone who's here today, wherever you are in the world, you're more than welcome. Jen is going to be answering some questions in a moment. So if you've got anything you'd like to ask Jen, and it could also be comments as well, if you want to share a bit about your own experiences, I'd love to hear that because, you know, this is a community, it's give and take, and it's not just questions, because you might not have any questions, but you might want to share an experience or how you've dealt with this, your own journey and how you've dealt with addiction, or maybe you've faced up to it, or maybe you think that you can't be addicted to carbs and sugar. I want to hear from anyone really about your opinion. Just leave your comments either on the Facebook group or on the YouTube live, and Jen and I can see those, so they'll come up and then we can discuss those. You can be part of the conversation as well. And just before we do that, we're just going to have a little bit of a précis of the conversation so far in the four episodes with Jen, just to get you thinking if you've got anything you want to say. Right, Jen, sorry about that. Over to you.
Yeah, so obviously go and watch the episodes if you want the stuff in more detail, or read Fork in the Road. I've got my screen blurred, so you can't read it.
Blurry, yeah.
Fork in the Road, Jen Unwin on Amazon. All profits go to the Public Health Collaboration, so you're supporting an excellent cause and more work like this if you go ahead and buy a copy. And we're about to bring out a journal diary as well. So if anybody wants to kind of work on keeping track of stuff, there'll be a Fork in the Road diary as well on Amazon soon. So we did four episodes, and the first one was really like, what is addiction, or how would you know if you had a food addiction type problem? And again, I'm going to be talking about this at the conference as well, on the Friday on May the 20th. The whole day is really about this, but we'll be talking about these particular issues. So what is addiction? And we talked about the acronym CRAVED, which gives you the six sort of signs to look out for. A sort of craving or compulsion that you can't resist, you know, even though you want to, and you're saying to yourself, definitely no biscuits today, and then you end up having biscuits sort of despite your better intentions. R is reaching for more, so that's that thing about, you know, two biscuits is enough initially, and then it's three and four, and then in the end you've worked up to, you know, only the whole packet is good enough. A is for activities neglected, which is this phenomenon where the more we get into the food, the more we sort of get out of doing all the other things that are meaningful in life, like exercising, socializing, you know, concentrating on work and family, things like that. We'd sort of narrow down and get just really into the food. So, you know, V is for volume. So it's having really always eating more than you intended, finding it hard to sort of have a reasonable amount. E is for exclusion. And that really is just to pick up the idea that when you try and stop, you might get some withdrawal symptoms like shakes or grumpiness or headaches or gastrointestinal symptoms, and you feel pretty grim. It's that sort of low blood sugar type thing.
It's a bit like sort of a cold turkey.
D is for damage. And for me, this is the sort of, in a way, the sort of really core symptom is that we continue to do these behaviours despite knowing that they're doing us some physical or mental harm. So we might already be type 2 or pre-diabetic. We might be overweight. We might know that our mental health is suffering, because it will do for those of us who've been on a high sugar diet. We know our mental health isn't as good, and it does damage how the brain works. But we, despite even knowing that and noticing it in ourselves that we feel worse mentally and physically, we still have that compulsion to do it. And that's really, those are really the hallmarks of any addiction. Obviously we're talking about food, but obviously alcohol, nicotine, etc. And
well, can I ask about food addiction for a moment? Because whenever I describe my, I think, addiction around not all food, but actually it's only particular types of food, and I wondered how common that was. So for me, it's certainly carbohydrate in the form of wheat, flour. It's interesting, you know, chips and baked potatoes, spuds generally, I don't really care for. I don't mind them. I wouldn't really miss them. But certainly, like, breaded anything is my downfall. Yes. You know, a battered sausage, a battered cod. Yeah, I'm all over that and I can't stop. You know? Yeah. So do you find that there's certain types of food we're talking about? And I don't want to put words in your mouth if there's not. Or is it genuinely a food addiction?
Yeah, no. The key culprits are sugars and grains and ultra-processed foods, yeah, because they tend to have the sugar, the wheat and the fat and the salt, you know, in that sort of glorious combination, the sort of Dorito effect, the pizza, the donuts, those things that have been sort of made by man to be women to be delicious and irresistible. Yeah, it's sort of commercial foods really, but sugars and grains are the main ones. And you know, when they've done research looking at what people binge on or what people say are their addictive foods, those are the top ones. And then interestingly, cheese did sneak in at number 10. That was the first real food that sneaks into the list. The other things are ice cream, biscuits, crisps, pizzas.
Which, well, ironically, cheese is the very first thing processed by humans like 8,000 years ago. So isn't that interesting? Like, it comes from a natural source, but it's also processed to make it into something different. Isn't that interesting? Yeah it's not ultra processed, but it is
dairy is designed to grow animal, to grow baby animals, isn't it? It's designed to be delicious. It has actually got that combination of fat and carbohydrate like nuts have. They're the only, you know, there's rare things in nature that have that sort of that combination. And we're just designed to love them because that's how we survived. And when we lived in that environment where we only got those things in the winter, in the autumn to get fat to survive the winter, it was all good. I would have been a survivor. You would have been a survivor.
Yep. We've been there at the front.
And that's why we're here today, because our ancestors have passed that down. You know, there's definitely a genetic component. There's definitely this kind of evolutionary thing. That's a really important thing that we went through it's not our fault that we behave like this. It's actually because we live in this wacky food environment. We've been exposed to these weird foods. They've hijacked our dopamine pathways in our brain, which was what we talked about in session 2. Food is addictive.
That was fascinating to me. You said at the beginning of this, you know, which part really had an impact on me. And I was kind of most taken aback by what you said about the hormones and, of course, how the addictions feed hormones, but also how the receptors in the brain, this is what I didn't understand, the receptors in the brain get either taken away or damaged. I don't want to get the language wrong here, but...
Down-regulated is what they say, right. Down-regulated. Yeah, so that let's take sugar, you know, the more sugary foods that you have, you get these kind of dopamine spikes in response to that, which is the thing that makes it addictive, because the brain loves, in a sense, we like that sort of dopamine. And that's the same as other substances of addiction, same process. But the brain tries to rebalance by knocking out a few receptors for dopamine. So although you might have a lot of dopamine sloshing around, it's not available to the brain, and you really need dopamine because it's the motivation neurotransmitter. So that's why we feel more sluggish, more flat, you know, in the post sugar times. We actually feel, you're actually sort of digging yourself a hole, really. You're going to feel more and more depressed, and then people get stuck in the pattern of trying to get the hit by having more and more of the substance, but actually damaging the brain in a sense more and more, and getting deeper and deeper into
more of a numbing feeling, I suppose, as time goes on. But the interesting thing I remember you saying in episode 4 is that actually then the reversal happens, whereby when you cut out the sugar and the carbs, your receptors get upgraded. I don't know if that's the right expression, whereby you have more of them. So if you then hit the sugar and the carbs again, you get a massive sensation of ecstasy almost. And then that means that effectively you then, you know, we want it and the addiction kicks in with a vengeance afterwards.
Yeah. So for those of us with proper food addiction, it's really important to be abstinent from sugars and carbohydrates, because of that you know, we say that the addiction's doing press ups in the background, even if you've, you know, you've maybe done a year and you feel like you've got a handle on it, then you have a little bit, as you say, the brain lights up, and then it can be really hard for people to get back on the wagon, to sort of use that, yeah, that terminology. So, you know, this, obviously this doesn't, I'm not saying this applies to everybody. Most people, if you ask them, they know, actually. So we've been doing this study, this clinical study, and we just asked people to volunteer if they thought they had a food addiction. And when we actually did the screening, 100% of people who thought they had food addiction did have food addiction. So we screened them on the questionnaires, and they were right. And David says the same in practice, that when he says to people, oh, do you think there might be a bit of an addictive problem here? They say, yes, you know, I can't stop eating bread or cornflakes or whatever it is. And they do know. I just think it's something that we need to keep talking about, because people haven't necessarily heard of it, and they wonder why they can't stick to the low carb or the keto diet, even though it's good for them for whatever reason, diabetes, weight, mental health, whatever reason they're doing it. Some people still struggle to stick to it, and it may be that there's this sort of addictive component. So obviously, right, it's not everybody. You know, some people, yeah, can have the odd keto treat. You know, they can, you know, some people can even have the odd cheat day, but they're not food addicts. So I don't want everyone listening to think, right, I've got to sort of abstain from all these things forever. It's very individual. So I have to be, yeah, quite strict. You know, you can probably flex it a bit more. Some people we know, as I say, can, you know, have a week off and just go back to it, no problem at all.
Exactly that point, and that's what I reflected on for me. So and I think I shared on this series, but I don't mind saying here, that I see that, and Dave Wolf's group is amazing. I actually joined Dave Wolf and Anna and Judith for their live, what's it called again, their group, I can't remember now,
Sugar X,
that's it. And I was talking to them, and I was talking about, you know, the patterns that I have, and I was in a room full of addicts, and I thought, yeah, I belong here, this makes sense, because I can't keep things in a little bubble. You know, a cheat day is not a cheat day for me. It becomes a week, becomes a month, and then I don't know, yes, where it's going to end. So, yes, I have to just completely stop things. And what's been really interesting, I've lost 5 kilos in the last 3 weeks now.
Oh,
really,
wow,
being very strict on keto, yeah, not letting anything slip in. And then last week, I suddenly got to the point after 2 weeks where I was like, oh, I just, you know, why not just have that thing? I was like, that's interesting. Well, where's that voice coming from?
Where's that whisper?
Because yeah,
that's the sort of addicted part of your brain. Oh, it's fine. It's
your birthday
last week. It's your birthday. You know, you can handle it. It's fine. Just one. You'll, yeah, get back on tomorrow.
And yada, it's your and your anniversary, I saw as well, Jen. So your anniversary.
Yeah,
So there you go. So you've got an excuse to celebrate. Why not? But that's exactly it. People like us, and I won't put you in this camp, but people like me, we will then start a pattern which is negative and we don't want it. So we have to find ways. And I think that's the other thing that's really important. It's all very well saying you have an addiction. It's all very well saying don't eat these things. It's the strategy around that which is essential, yeah, isn't it? And that's what we're, yeah, also talking about towards the end of the series. And hopefully it's tonight with some people, if you want to share that.
Yeah.
Because it's really important, isn't it?
How do you keep going? How do you kind of build a life outside the food, you know, where you're trying, yeah, to sort of concentrate on other things that give you, you know, this sort of steady, you know, yeah, well-being and, you know, sense of well-being. And how can you get that in other ways in your life? And again, that's completely unique for all of us, isn't it? It's, you know, is it going to be yoga for you? Is it going to be painting, singing, I don't know, gardening, all of these things that can, you know, help people keep a bit of balance? I can see some really good questions coming in.
Yeah, well, we're going to come to those now then. So anyone who's watching on YouTube, Facebook, wherever it might be, we see all your questions in the same place. So leave a comment. I think the only place where you might have to put your name down is on Facebook, because sometimes it can be a bit funny about showing the names. Firstly, let's go through to who's here this evening. So Beth Hawken, good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Hey, Jack, I want to come to your question in a moment because I know you've got something, yeah, for us. It's Nicola Locke, who's a local to you, I think, isn't she?
Hi, Nicola, she's a saint. She helps us out with our low-carb group, and she's an ambassador for the PHC, so it's great.
And
to
she's
know
also been on this podcast, so check out her episode. And then here we've got Jen, who's saying, when we're talking about what's your, you know, like, whiskey of choice, I suppose, and she went for good old Chippy Chips. So there you go. Chippy I can relate chips. To that. Fries for those in the States. And the first of our questions is from Jack, who says, do you find food addiction is more prevalent in people with ADHD or autism?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jack. And actually, I do, partly because this isn't really a very, it's not a yet well-recognized condition. It's not a medical diagnosis yet. We're campaigning for it to be included in the various manuals of sort of official medical diagnoses. So because of that, there hasn't been a lot of research funded or a lot of, you know, there aren't a lot of clinics. But there is research showing that people with addiction are more sort of distractible or inattentive. So it could be. And also you tend to find that when people manage to give up the sugar and the gluten particularly, that they have improvement in their attention symptoms. So there does seem to be some kind of a link. And before then, we mentioned Dave Wolf, who's a dietitian in the States, who's got who works with SugarX Global, which is a food addiction community. And he has ADHD, and he was on quite a bit of medication. And he'll talk about that. He's probably on a podcast somewhere talking about it. And he's managed to improve a lot and come off lifelong medication since he's kind of got food sober. So the answer, Jack, is probably, but there isn't a lot of research on it. And it's definitely worth a try. You know, I don't know what your situation is or whether you've tried sort of keto, no sugar, no grains, but it's definitely worth a try to see how that affects the symptoms of ADHD and autism.
See, one thing that being a teacher, I remember the children who had ADHD, they very much talked about sugar being a massive problem for those kids and said, you know, we should really help these children to kick sugar. And so let's try and do that. And we actually found a massive improvement. Now, I'm not making the next step to say the link to addiction is proved. I don't know either way. But I just know as a teacher, sugar was seen as being a huge problem for the way those kids were focusing, concentrating. And it just wasn't helping them at all. And by cutting the sugar, we saw a massive difference. Autism as well, I don't know a lot about, apart from when I was a teacher of special needs kids. And but it'd be interesting for adults and how they respond to that. I wish there was more studies on this stuff, because this is really, really important.
It is. You know, we need stuff on the brain, you know, sort of particularly brain imaging. But also just, you know, wouldn't be a difficult study to do to kind of get people to fill in questionnaires and work out, you know, if there was some kind of association there. I mean, it's starting now, this whole movement for sort of nutritional psychiatry. You know, there's a couple of people in the States. There's Georgia Eads and Chris Palmer, both doctors in the States who are, Chris Palmer's got a book coming out soon called Brain Energy. Which looks amazing. I'm definitely going to get it. And it's all about how does the brain sort of function best, really? And I guess he's going to be talking about how the brain loves ketones, and, you know, how you can get more your brain sort of working really well with nutrition. So looking forward to, and I think Georgia Eads writing a book as well. So it's coming, you know, this whole field is definitely developing.
Fantastic. I mean, there's also a good question to ask there, and that's what gets the money for research? That's one of the problems, isn't it? And, this is an area that there's not in the interest of big money necessarily to try and cure, is it? But let's be honest.
I mean, it's actually kind of the opposite, isn't it? And if you look at in the literature, the papers that sort of say, oh, sugar addiction doesn't exist, when you look at the conflicts of interest of the people who've written those papers, you know, they're basically funded by the corn refiners. There's one paper in particular that people are always citing saying food addiction isn't real, but it was supported by the Rip Foundation, and Dr. Rip got like it's in the New York Times. If you Google it, he gets like a $40,000 a month retainer from the corn refiners or something like that. So The food manufacturers are obviously motivated to sort of rubbish this idea. And it's like nicotine all over again. I mean, they stood up, didn't they, and said nicotine wasn't addictive. We all know it is addictive, and it's done terrible harm to people's health. So we're at that same point, really, where the food industry are in denial about the addictive nature of their product.
Yeah, yeah. For now.
Well, I'm not sure they are in denial, but they're hoping that it will
work. Yeah, I think they know.
I think they probably know, and that's why they spend money on research and the message. They spend a lot on. I mean, was it Coca-Cola? I can't remember the figure. Coca-Cola spend the most incredible amount of money, on this stuff.
yeah, and to be omnipresent in kids' lives, you know, that's what they do. Nicola, by the way, welcome to the show tonight, the recording. She just shared that I'm the same. If I go off, I'm off for a few months. I struggle to get back on. And then she also said, you know, I have to be all or nothing. And I think that's exactly
it's very typical, very typical of the addict brain. And we often say this, we're very sort of black and white, or it's all or nothing. I'm kind of on it or I'm off it really spectacularly. Addicts have these, we're usually sort of quite high achieving people, you know, sort of motivated people. We're a bit all or nothing, or we like something, we want to get it done, we want to know now what the answer is. And so we struggle sometimes with this kind of idea that actually we're going to have to really work on this probably all our lives. There isn't one food plan that I can just say to you, eat this and you'll be fine, you'll never have another craving kind of thing. We have to sort of kind of be vigilant every day, really.
I think know yourself. Okay. That's the key, isn't it? What is your trigger for you? That's the thing. You know, I just can't have breaded food. I can't have bread. I can't have pastry, because if I do, that's it. Whereas actually rice and chips, you know, they're not a trigger for me. I don't eat them because they're not good for me, but they're not a trigger in the same way. But the floury stuff, I can't go near that. So I just have to be honest and say, not for me. Nothing.
Not my food. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm the same. Too, you know? Anything in a packet, anything crunchy, salty. Yeah. Not good. Yeah. Not good for me.
So Jen here, I don't actually know what this means. So I don't know if you can understand.
She literally ends up with, I think she means diarrhea and vomiting, which falls off.
I thought that's what it might be, but I don't want to put words in her mouth. It might be wrong.
Yeah, you feel terrible, don't you? And you've still done it. And like, you know, then sometimes we go ahead and do it again. And you kind of can't believe. I was just saying, I'm a migraineur, and
me too.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing actually is quite in common with sugar addicts. And I know that if I fall off the wagon or have a drink, I'm really much more likely to get a migraine. I'm fine if I'm just really clean with the food and regular with the food. I don't even get a headache. You know, I'm completely fine. And yet, you know, I occasionally, ridiculously, will still do it.
Yeah. Just for those who are listening.
In the moment, you forget. Your brain sort of forget that ever happened, you know. And you think it won't happen. It's like magical thinking. Oh, it won't happen this time. And then it does.
Yeah, definitely. Just for those who are listening on the podcast, you can't see. So Jen here, who's one of the people asking a question, just said that she ends up with V&D, so vomit and diarrhea, I believe that is. Yeah, if that's not, I'm really sorry, Jen. We thought it was vomit and diarrhea. It might be something completely different. with V&D, she falls off the wagon, and I can certainly relate to that. Now, this is a bit longer, this one. This is from Claire. And I think it ends abruptly, so I don't know if they're supposed to be... Sorry, can you still see Jen there? I don't know.
Yeah, I can.
Hello. She says, Claire says, good to be here. I started kicking sugar at the beginning of lockdown, and I've tweaked my diet towards low carb ever since. That's interesting, because I think, and I don't know what you think as well, Jen, a lot of people, and I include myself in this, started eating poorly in the lockdown because it's like the end of the world. What's to lose, you know? And especially if you're locked up next to a fridge, it's more easy to eat things, isn't it, than otherwise.
I think it went one of two ways. I think some went like that, and then some really took the opportunity, you know, to kind of not bring the stuff in the house and
on top of it all.
Claire was getting on top of it, which is excellent.
So yeah, she says she no longer eats pouches of sweets or dog biscuits, yeah, in hot drinks. So, Phil, I've kicked my sugar addiction. But that's interesting as well. Maybe it's there in the background, Claire, and it'd come back with a vengeance. So I guess just always be careful. I also now cook low-carb bread and crackers, so the majority of my food is low-carb. My problem is still got the habit of wanting to snack when I'm driving or I have repetitive tasks to do.
Yeah.
I choose low-carb snacks, but I'm not necessarily hungry. That's interesting. The snacking.
Now, this is so interesting. This is kind of a behavioural thing. This is a lot of people in our group struggle with things like eating, because they've always eaten in front of the telly, you know, that they're still eating in front of the telly. They might, like you say, there might be low carb snacks, but it's still something they don't really want to be doing. So it's how to sort of break those habits, replace them with other things. Driving. I mean, I suppose the thing is try not to take them with you in the first place, or, you know, driving gloves, or, you know, just trying to, you know, if it's a short journey, do an experiment of trying not to eat. It's just breaking those habits, or, you know, finding something else to do with your hands. I'm a big knitter, so I kind of in the evenings it stops me eating because I'm knitting, and you can't eat and knit at the same time. So, you know, everybody's unique, but it's just picking off these habits. It sounds like you've really come a long way, and you just need to keep going. You know, take the next thing that you feel is sort of, you know, problematic for you, and take some small steps to do something different. And that's the journey, in a sense. Like you were saying, Dan, it is a journey. It's like we call the book Fork in the Road. You know, we're taking a different path, but there are still always more steps we can take, more improvements, little tweaks we can make. Have a try, do something different. Does it work? Is it better for you? Yes, carry on doing it. No, try something else.
Yeah, definitely. And Claire just came out to say it feels more like it's a habit she needs to break than an addiction, which is fair enough.
Exactly.
Isn't it interesting when smokers give up? I remember, especially when they had smoking in pubs here and they don't anymore. But I think I remember a lot of smokers saying, oh, it's what do you do with your hands after a meal? Because they're so used to then getting the cigarette out and the little rituals around the cigarette in the hand and in the mouth and lighting it. And actually, it's the habit of doing it, wasn't it? Which is great. So,
And they tend to put on weight when they quit smoking. People tend to put on weight, or when people give up drinking, saying they tend to sort of eat more sweet things to sort of still get that dopamine hit, and you say have something to do.
Yes, very very normal that. Here we have a message from New Zealand. So thank you. It's nice to know people around the world are listening to this. That's very exciting. And then we have a question here from Kate. Hi, Kate here. I'm a registered nurse with many years of addiction experience. She's lost 6 stone and kept off for 14 years. That's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Have an amazing diet cook from scratch. Also, you cook from scratch your diet, I think that's what it means, but still can't kick the sugar. I have a healthy BMI and a fab fitness levels, age 53, get great control over life, but still can't kick the sugar. That's interesting, isn't it?
It's really interesting. And what I suppose my question would be, you know, what would be better if you could kick the sugar? You know, what's going to get you over that last hump? Because it sounds like you've really done amazingly. We'd need to know more about the kind of particular things and times. But I suppose I would start with what would be better if you could kick the sugar, trying to find that motivation, you know, what's over the finish line, if you like, that would be better than where you are now. Because if, you know, if things are fine now, you're not going to be motivated to kick it, because that is quite a toughie, really. You've got to have some sort of reason, some sort of why to help you get there.
See, it's interesting because I was talking to somebody the other day about their diabetes, and she said that she has a little bit of chocolate every single night. And I mean like Cadbury's, not, you know, not even like a dark chocolate, just dairy milk, which is like virtually just a sugar bar with a little bit of chocolate in it. And I was like, why? And she said, because they, whoever they are trying to take our sugar, like our chocolate, away from us. And that's the last thing I have to hold on to. And I thought, the whole mindset's very odd, but almost like that's it. And I thought, and I'm not saying, because she might be listening,
like a rebellion.
that does sound like an addiction to me, like that kind of, I just, why take my sugar away? Isn't that weird? Almost like Well, you wouldn't say about anything else, would you? I just, you know, well, maybe cigarettes you would, but I just find that interesting, really. So thank you, Kate. Any more details, please let us know. And it'd be great to hear. And Gemma just asked you there about what's the final thing you needed to help you on your journey just over that
what
kind
would
of
be life. Better? What would be better in your life if you did manage to kick sugar? That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Definitely. The next question, by the way, has got some really long words. I don't know what they even are. So adrenal insufficiency and
hypothyroidism. Low thyroxine.
Oh, I see. Okay. And find the key to low carb food is the only thing that's given me some energy back. That's interesting.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. And it does. I mean, David's found that. So he's, for people that don't know, he's a GP in the UK. He has found that thyroid function improves in his patients when they go keto low carb. So that's it's another reason to do it, really. Yeah. So that's good, Jen, that you found something. And obviously that's going to help you stick to it, because who wants to feel rubbish, really? If you've got that energy back, you're going to want to keep going, which is brilliant.
Yeah, which is great. And then Kate's just come back again, which is great to hear from you. I try it every day and promise myself the next day I will do it. I can do it if I stay at home, but not if it's in my way. Now, that's interesting. So it's almost the environment is the thing that's tripping you up there. Because I remember you saying to me, Jen, 2 years ago on the podcast about having maybe your own cupboard if you live with a family who eat sugar and stuff, and they keep their stuff in that cupboard out of your way. And if you don't have that problem, just make sure your environment is clean of the thing that's going to be the problem for you. And I can see it sounds like Kate's had that situation at home, but it's when you're out and about, it might be more of a challenge because it's in your face and it's people offer
it to us, don't they? They literally. Yeah, I had that experience. We went out for my birthday lunch and the chef guys all came out and sang happy birthday and brought me a dessert with like a firework thing in it, and all sang happy birthday and kind of stood around waiting for me to eat this dessert. It was right in my face.
It
was a setup. Yeah. So that's great if you can stay away from it when you're at home. And then it's just trying to develop strategies or think of things to say. I think sometimes we feel like it's rude, or you know, that we need to find a form of words to say that we don't eat those things, or you know, we don't want them. Make sure you're not really hungry when you go out would be another trick, Kate. You know, make sure you've had your protein and your fat for the day, so you're not actually hungry when you're out and about, or take stuff with you. I think that's another thing people think, oh, I'll be fine, you know, I'll find something while I'm out, or I'll, but you know, and you can't, can you, sometimes, like airports, train stations. You need to plan ahead and take those good nutrient foods with you so that you can not be hungry and stay on plan.
Yeah, that's exactly my strategy as well. So an omelette is a blessing. And I find that I don't eat breakfast, but if I'm in a situation where, say, for instance, I'm going to London and, you know, there are kind of like coffee stands at the station which have pastry at them. And there's like McDonald's at the other end of the station. There's all these real fast food, old processed rubbish places. And I just think, you know what, if I have an omelette with some cheese on it in the morning, that's me done until that evening. I don't feel remotely hungry, which really helps. And then it becomes, you're not hungry. So you don't, that's that first step, I think. If you're hungry, then your brain can very quickly say, go and get that food. But if you're not hungry and you're full, and actually the same about protein and fat, which fills you up in a way that makes you not want to eat, which is really nice. Not just that you're full and you don't need to eat, but you don't really want to eat because you feel so full. And that really helps me. So I sort of strategize on that. And I actually do it with my daughter as well on the way to school. She's 6 and I feed her some eggs in the morning, thinking that's the best way for her to fill up for the day, you know, rather than eating the sort of rubbish school food. She's going to be actually eating some decent, you know, food in the morning. Absolutely. And then by the time she gets home, she's ready for a nice big meal again. So that's kind of what we do for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's over to Jack. Pancreatitis in 2020 and became diabetic afterwards. Been low carb and off since then, and lost 3.5 stone. Fantastic, Jack. Well done. I don't know what a gypsy tart is, but it's his thing. It's the same as, like, for me, it's a bacon turnover, which is everywhere. But for him, it's lucky because it's only available in Kent and he lives now
in Bristol. Is it that thing with coconut sprinkles on the top and jam? I think there's jam in it, isn't there? And pastry. I know that something like that. He'll probably
sounds pretty deadly combination to me.
It sounds a deadly combo.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Isn't it funny, that's one way of doing it. Someone else had chippy chips. There's something usually about some sort of association. I don't know whether, you know, like our mums made it or it was always some sort of celebratory food that we have at home. It is, you know, we have these real kind of strong emotional connections. Mum was definitely a food addict and a feeder, and she was a brilliant cook. So, you know, we had loads of things that were sort of part of, you know, general family life, but also special occasions. And it's hard to break up with all of that. Oh, it's brown. Really? Oh, my God. Brown sugar and condensed milk. Well, Jack, that would have been my thing if I'd known about it.
Yeah. In a condensed top.
Milk. In a, yeah. Condensed milk was one of my things as a kid, because this often starts very young. I don't remember a time when I wasn't obsessed with sweet things. And I used to sneak into the kitchen and eat condensed milk straight out of the tin with a teaspoon.
Yeah, nice. Actually, the only time I've ever had condensed milk was when I was on the top of a mountain in the Pyrenees. And they said, you need to eat this. And they took the snow off the mountain, put it into a cup, poured the condensed milk on top. And we all had to have that as a way to try to get our energy for the mountain climb. I realise now it's probably the worst thing, because after about an hour, you're kind of then on the floor with a sugar crush.
You're on the crash. Yeah.
Jack's telling us much more about this, but I'm going to leave that now, because you know what? We're all triggered now, Jack,
in a good way. Daisy's online as well, and she's telling us as well. School dinners, I think we did have that in our school dinners as well. I seem to remember that with a squirt.
It's interesting. And Daisy's here. Hello, Daisy from Keto Woman. Again, about Gypsy Tart. It's a pastry cake with a sweet concoction inside, made with evaporated milk and brown sugar. School dinners in Kent. My word, if you're having that for a school dinner, can you imagine Friday afternoon what the kids were like after they've had that? And then they're asleep by 3:30, even they're going home. That's incredible. Right, we do have another comment from Claire. Here we go. What if the fit and healthy lady with an all BMI wore a CGM for a couple of weeks so good she can idea. See what sugar does to her blood sugar levels? That's a really good idea. I did that for a couple of weeks. You can really get a good sense of how things, although it is bad for me. And the reason it's bad for me is an addiction reason, because I thought I'd put it on there. I'd see how my blood sugar levels were, and they were really boring because I was only eating like green vegetables and steak. So what did I do? I started eating bad things to see the effect on my blood sugar levels. And by the end of the week, I was back on it again. So I had to just say, don't do it. Anyway, she said that worked for me. It made me realize how easy it would be to become insulin resistant. Yes.
The CGM is so interesting, particularly if you are struggling, because it's like immediate feedback, isn't it? There's going to be some guys at the conference that can also do immediate insulin resistant tests, because you can't actually get that in the UK from your GP. You know, you can't get that craft test where you. So there'll be some guys at the conference can do that if anyone's interested in knowing if they're getting insulin resistant.
Yeah, so fantastic. Now, I've just got a question for everyone who's listening now, not about tarts, because there's a lot of that coming in. Manchester chart mentioned by Nicola Locke there. I just want to ask people, what is your strategy? How is it that you manage to deal with addiction if you have an addiction? So, you know, I see here that Daisy says swimming in the sea and walking her dogs is her best way. And
you know, cold water plunging is really like known for it now. And if anyone's read Dopamine Nation, by Anna Lemke, it was an absolute brilliant book about addiction. She really recommends cold water therapy. I'm working up to it, but yeah, absolutely. Cold water, walking, any sort of physical activity actually is really good, not for weight loss, but just for the sort of mental benefits, balancing benefits of it.
There you go. So that's one. I think for me, it's kind of the walking does help. Like I said in the show, I find slowing things down is important. So I haven't tried it recently, but Mark Davison came on the podcast, and this works for addiction as well as for low carb and keto. And he said, if you're hungry, when you go to your fridge, open it. You should have already made 4 boiled eggs that sit in the middle of your fridge at all times. Mm-hmm. So if you really are hungry, there's 4 boiled eggs there. And he said, I've never eaten all 4. He said, that's a lot of like eggs to get through. Three at a push if you really are hungry. He said, but having those 4 eggs has been his way of trying to stop it from being eating anything, only an egg. And he knows that that's something that's going to fill him up. It's full of protein, full of fat, and it's going to be really kind of like a good strategy for him. But I think slowing down the process is really important. And if that means kind of like not going to the fridge or planning ahead a little bit, or maybe going for a walk, whatever it might be, I think that's kind of something that works for my case. Mm-hmm. Definitely. What about yourself, Jen? What do you do?
Yeah, I've kind of got in some much better routine. So I do a boot camp sort of exercise. David and I go running is a bit glorified, jogging in the mornings. I do yoga. I do my knitting, as I said, you know, so trying to sort of, you know, get in those, you know, good sleep. Sleep's another thing. Like if you're stressed or poor sleep, you're much more likely to make poor food choices the next day. You know, that's really been shown loads of times. So getting in good sleep hygiene, quite relaxing in the evenings, you know, not too many screens. Haha, we'll all be awake at midnight tonight.
After this, it's... Stop them after this. Yeah, don't turn off now.
Jack said in the comments, you know, I need to get a dopamine hit from another source. And that's absolutely it, really. I mean, often with ADHD, it's about dopamine. You're kind of seeking it, if you like. And you can get it from bad ways like scrolling on your phone, alcohol, drugs, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, trying to get it from exercise, from ticking things off your to-do list, from, you know, planning out your day, etc. and trying to get that dopamine from places other than food. Claire says walking and workouts, Fitbit.
Look at the motivation.
Because we tend to be, you know, once we're, again, the addict brain, once you're in a thing, you tend to get in a thing. So we can start to sort of get a bit addicted to the exercise, can't we? Or to the stats on the Fitbit. But, you know, that's in a good way, so long as it doesn't go, you know, too crazy. You know, that can be a good thing. Yeah. So learning, using those sort of skills and resources that you have, and bringing them into this project of sort of getting well. So, you know, if you're an organized person, well, get organized, get planning your food, you know, start making lists. If you're a person who likes to, you know, maybe do it with someone else, get a buddy or join a group like SugarX. Or I have a Clubhouse on a Wednesday night. So tomorrow night, 6 p.m. on Clubhouse, which is you just download the app, look for Fork in the Road. And tomorrow night we're talking about the pros and cons of weighing and measuring food for food addicts. We have a different topic or a speaker every Wednesday, and you can listen to all the replays. So, yeah, connect with other people. I think it's something we haven't mentioned so far, but, you know, a lot of us have sort of suffered in silence, feeling a bit ashamed and feeling we ought to be able to do better. But connect to this. There's loads of communities now out there that you can connect to and get support from and feel like, you know, you're not the only one who has these crazy behaviors and thoughts.
And just remember, it's only crazy in the context of where humanity is today. That's really important to state.
Yeah,
it's only crazy because you have access to ultra processed foods, sugar and carbs on a daily, if not minute by minute almost, basis in society. And like Jen said there, in terms of evolution, your ancestors are the ones who are able to survive. The ones who stood in the background around the fruit tree and said, not for me, thanks. Their ancestors probably aren't here, or there's fewer of them. But the ones who have made it through evolution, now we have a food environment which is totally alien to anything that humanity's experienced for millions of years. And so, you know, the environment has changed so much, and that's the problem. And we as survivors are now in a world of abundance where it's actually damaging to us, and our cravings are completely unleashed because there's nothing to stop them. There's no famine or shortage. I'm not saying there should be, but there isn't a famine or shortage like there used to be. Right. And that's what's going on here. So with addiction, I think when you see it from that point of view, you realize actually this is normal, but at the same time, you can't let the addiction become the driver of your life and ruin your life. That's where you've got to manage things to then realize what to do.
So what can I do? What do I have to do? You know, like you and I wear glasses so we can see the world. You know, it's like an adaptation so that we can see the world. So we have to make adaptations so that we can, you know, live our, you know, be our best selves, which we're not when we're in the sugar. You know, we're just not our best selves. We don't want to talk to people, or we don't, you know, kind of feel down, and you know, you don't like yourself, and nobody wants to be like that. So what do we need to do? Plan the food, you know, try and find a a food plan that works for you, and then work on these other things that you know, are going to get you these feel good hormones in other ways. Look after yourself, take care of yourself, and yeah,
that's it. So Jen, then I was going to say, we're just the last few moments of this live together. You have a conference coming up. Do you want to tell us all about that? And then I was going to tell everyone about how they can win a ticket for free, because I'm buying five extra tickets, which I want to give away to people who might want to go to the conference, but maybe they can't afford it. So tell us a bit about the conference firstly.
Yeah. So May the 20th, which is coming up very soon, and it's a Friday, and we're going to be in Bristol at the Bristol Royal Marriott Hotel for the day. And as I say, we've got Bitten Johnson, who some people will have heard of, but she's probably internationally the most well-known clinician in this field. And we've got Dr. Paul Early, who's past chair of the American Society of Addiction Medicine. There are two keynotes, but there's other people speaking, myself and Dave Avram-Wolf, who we've also mentioned, coming over from the States. So it's going to be an amazing day. I mean, I've never met Bitten in person. I've worked with her over Zoom and done her course, and it's going to be fantastic to actually. Overeaters Anonymous will be there as well, telling people about what they do, because they have groups running around the UK. Yeah, so it's going to be quite something. And then the Saturday Sunday is the Public Health Collaboration Conference that a lot of us are speaking at again, which also is going to be very, very interesting, I think, this year. And we've not had one for this will be, you know, we missed the last two, so it's going to be lovely to see everybody in person.
It feels like normality returning, which is lovely, isn't it? And just to let everyone know, I've got five tickets that I've purchased for the event. I'm going to be at the event as well. So I've also got an extra one for myself, but I've got five tickets to give away to people. So if you want to win one of those, it's actually incredibly, incredibly easy. All you need to do is go to Apple Podcasts. I don't think Spotify does it as yet, but Apple Podcasts does. And if you just leave a review for my podcast, I mean, hopefully a nice one. It doesn't have to be. It's up to you. You have to be honest. But a lovely review. If you've enjoyed this series in particular, please leave a review for the podcast and mention this series about food addiction with Jen. And the first five, even bad ones, I will give those tickets to. Okay, so just make sure there's a way you can connect with me. And if you want to send me an email to say you've done that so I can send your tickets to you, it's dan@uklowcarb.com. So dan@uklowcarb.com. And then I'll be very happy to get your tickets to you. I guess it's digital tickets, is it? Is it, Jen? So I can just send an email with the info, or?
Yeah, they would just need to bring the sort of proof of thing so that you'd get a PayPal receipt, I think. So if they can just print that out or show it on the
phone.
I'll
just tell you the names, is probably easy as well.
If you tell us the names, we can just add it to the list. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, so and I think actually, you know what, not only is it great to be there, because I think, you know, you're going to get a lot from the actual conversation, being in a room with people in the same mindset, I think, is really useful as well. And just learning from each other and how we can manage all of this. Right, absolutely. Just a few more points here. So firstly, quite a question by Kate. Can you remind me the name of your Wednesday night 6 p.m. group, please? And thank you both so much.
Yeah, Kate, definitely. Come along. So it's the Clubhouse app. Download it to your phone, Android or Apple. And then if you search for Fork in the Road room, you'll find it. And I'm at Jen_Unwin on Clubhouse as well. If you follow me, you'd find the room that way, and you can listen to the replays as well. And that's me. I'm the same on Twitter, @Jen_Unwin.
Great, fantastic. So check out Clubhouse. Yeah, it's an app, isn't it? I think it's on all mobiles now, isn't it?
They've expanded it now. And I post the link on Twitter, and I post it also. There's two really good Facebook groups, Sugar Bomb in Your Brain, which is Bitten's Facebook group, and No Sugar, I'm Sweet Enough, which is Vera Tarman's Facebook group. They're both recommended Facebook groups for people with food addiction, so I post the link in there as well every week.
Great. And just a final few thank you. So thank you, Jen. Thank you very much for both. It's very interesting. Thank you for your expertise and time. I don't bring anything but experience, and Jen brings the experience and expertise. So a massive thank you to you, Jen, for sure. And then Claire says, I found your food addiction podcast series really interesting. Thank you. And that's, you know what, I think this is why I love doing series, because I think you do a podcast for an hour, which is great, but actually having a shorter episode, but more of them, means you can really dig into certain areas and topics in quite a lot of detail. And then you've got a week until the next time where you can dig into the next thing in a lot of detail. So I think they work quite well. And hopefully we'll do many more of them in the future. And then here we have Kathy, who just says, thank you, very interesting. And also Jack, who's done a great promotion this evening for North Kent based desserts. So there you go. Yeah. Cheers, Jack, to you as well.
We're all thinking about those now.
Julie, thank you both so much. Brilliant as ever. Oh, the praise is just coming in now. It's great, isn't
lovely,
it?
Lovely, lovely. Yeah,
we are a community, guys, and that's really important that we kind of.
Yeah, thanks for coming along. It's great.
Yeah, you're part of this whole evening with us. Well, thank you so much, Jen, for the podcast. It's been really exciting making this series with you, and hopefully you can come back on soon and talk a bit more about the work you're doing and how you can all help us.
Yeah, and I'll see you on May the 20th, Dan.
See you on the May 20th. Right. Take care, everyone. Have a lovely evening, morning and night, whatever time it is where you are in the world. And we'll see you all in Bristol. Take care, guys. Bye.